Coming up to 11 o'clock on KOIN in Portland. CBS News is next. Local news at 11:08. We have CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
CBS News. South Vietnam's cabinet has resigned, and there are reports the country's new president may also be on the way out. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. With a communist takeover appearing closer than ever, more political shuffling is going on in South Vietnam. Murray Frumson has a late report from Saigon.
President Chun Van Hung will probably be forced to resign or cede all his decision-making powers within days, if not hours. According to informed sources, General Duong Van Minh, the man who led the coup against the Diem regime in 1963, is expected to assume leadership of South Vietnam, most likely as prime minister. Constitutionally, he cannot become president for the moment. Reliable informants say Minh is the near-unanimous choice to undertake negotiations with the communists. Hanoi and the Viet Cong want him, so does the American Embassy, the CIA, and the French government. They agree he's the only one who can rally the country and perhaps stop the war. As for the Vietnamese, the general, popularly known as Thich Minh, is one of the few personalities in Saigon with anything resembling a nationwide recognition. Minh has always represented the so-called third force in Vietnamese politics, advocating conciliation with Hanoi. There are two obstacles to the change. One is Hung's reluctance to quit. The other is a group of generals who want to fight now and negotiate later. Murray Thompson, CBS News, Saigon.
More news in a moment.
Get America rolling. Roll on America, roll. Get on Goodyear radios. Roll on America, roll.
Goodyear wants America on radios to help lower the cost of driving. Save 30% off the regular price on Goodyear Steel Guard radials or custom tread radial tires.
Get on Goodyear radials. Save America, save.
Now through Saturday at participating dealers and Goodyear service stores.
Roll on America, roll.
Don?
Hey, what's all crying about?
I just want the baby to be born all right.
Oh, hey, it'll be all right. You've been taking good care of yourself. I know.
The time to worry about your first pregnancy is long before it happens, when your body is preparing itself for what it will have to go through. Find out what your body needs before you become pregnant. Write for the book, Food is More Than Just Something to Eat. Write Nutrition, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009.
Hey, why are you crying?
Because I'm so happy. That's silly.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The House of Representatives is still meeting at this hour in Washington trying to pass a bill that would authorize the use of American troops to evacuate some South Vietnamese as well as the Americans still in Saigon. The session may last all night. The Senate bill passed earlier would authorize $327 million for the evacuation and for humanitarian aid to the Vietnamese. Both the Pentagon and the White House have denied reports by two Japanese newspapers which say that a regiment of U.S. Marines has landed in South Vietnam to evacuate refugees. The Saigon-based Japanese reporters said more Marine landings are expected Thursday morning. The Pentagon said this is false. The White House said it is not true. President Ford Wednesday night told an audience in New Orleans that the Vietnam War is finished as far as America is concerned. In a speech at Tulane University, the president called for a great national reconciliation to meet other pressing matters throughout the world. A new Harris poll shows 68% of the Americans interviewed are opposed to the use of American troops to evacuate Vietnamese from South Vietnam. 22% said they favor it. The poll was taken last week, and 1,528 adults were interviewed for the sample of opinion. The Cambodian news agency says the new government leaders in that country are organizing 3 days of celebrations to start today to mark the recent Khmer Rouge victory following 5 years of war. The Coast Guard reports six people were killed late Wednesday night when their small plane crashed into Lake Pontchartrain while trying to land at New Orleans Airport. A flight plan listed six members of a Fort Lauderdale family aboard. Repeating his call for a quick resumption of the Geneva Mideast Peace Conference, Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko says his country would approve a settlement that includes strict guarantees for Israel's right to exist as an independent state. Now this.
Shows you really care. Marvel. everybody. This is Buck Owens. I've found a way of life in country music that tries to soften the hard blows that life can deal a fella. Now, make no mistake about it. Life can be cruel. Think of how cruel it's been to more than 200,000 babies born in this country every year, and they all had birth defects, 200,000 of them. Now, they didn't choose to start life with a handicap. So please help the March of Dimes in its fight against birth defects. Every child deserves the right to good health at birth. Please help and give them that right.
So join the March of Dimes today and find a way of life.
The Soviet Supreme Court has rejected an appeal by Mikhail Lviv, a Moscow Jew who's been sentenced to death on bribery charges. His wife gave the word to Western newsmen and said the only hope for her husband's life is a personal appeal to Soviet President Podgorny. Lviv was convicted of the charges in connection with his job as the director of a Moscow store. A short time before his arrest, he had applied for permission to emigrate and take his family to Israel. Doug Poling, CBS News.
Washington Governor Dan Evans says he believes lawmakers are closer now to acting in the area of school financing than they were a week ago before demonstrators came to Olympia. Evans says demonstrations by teachers at the state capitol are making headway with the legislature by bringing attention to the need for levy relief. But Evans says there's still the question of how much actual support exists for his proposal to increase taxes to replace special levies. An Oregon official says efforts are underway to save an $11 million church financing program whose operations are near collapse. State Corporation Commissioner Frank Healy says state investigators meet Thursday with principals involved in the church financing plan. The program holds mortgages on 300 churches around the country. The investment of about 7,000 congregation members are also involved. Officials of Fort Lewis near Tacoma say upwards of 1,000 refugees from Vietnam can be housed at the base on short notice. Officials say clothing, food, bedding, cooks, drivers, and volunteers are ready. Officials say some 36 doctors and nurses have volunteered the assistance to aid in handling refugees. Officials at St. Elizabeth Hospital in Yakima say former state Senator Perry Woodall remains in critical condition following a stroke at his home yesterday. The hospital says Woodall is in a deep coma and not responding to any stimuli at all. Woodall had served 30 years in the state legislature until his retirement last year. The weather forecast for the Portland-Vancouver area: rain and a little windy tonight. Mostly cloudy with showers likely through Friday. Lows in the mid-40s, highs both days in the low 50s. Winds south at 10 to 20 miles per hour tonight, becoming southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour tomorrow. Chance of measurable rainfall near 100% tonight, 80% tomorrow, and 60% tomorrow night. Right now in downtown Portland, it's 49 degrees. That's KOIN News to 1108. I'm Bill Garrity.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Thus, conscience does make cowards of us all. A quote, naturally, and almost as naturally from Shakespeare. On the other hand, like proverbs, quotes tend to contradict themselves. It was Oliver Goldsmith who said, "Conscience is a coward, and those faults it has not strength enough to prevent, it seldom has justice enough to accuse." That contradiction is what this story is all about.
What are you doing in that closet?
Oh, why, Aunt Hester, I was just trying to make myself at home.
Never poke your nose into anything in this house that isn't your business.
I didn't mean to.
What's that you have in your hand?
It's so queer. All leather and steel and buckles and things. I don't know what it is.
Nor is it your business to. While you stay here, don't you ever meddle with anything that doesn't belong to you. That's the first and last thing you have to learn about Malvern Grange.
Our mystery drama, Afraid to Live, Afraid to Die, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Jada Rowland and Anne Petoniak. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Inside you're free after all. You hear a freedom spirit like a wild bird call. Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all. Living free. Living free.
The urge hits. You know you have to hit the road. So with Buick Skylark SR firmly in hand, you do just that. Quickly, confidently, you're on your way. Skylark SR's touring car cockpit. Its bold stance and spirited V6 engine make exhilarating excursions a daily occurrence. Find out at your Buick dealer now.
Inside you're free. Inside you're free after all.
I can remember really going fishing with my dad. I'm sure I'd been with him before, but the first time I really remember it was wading downstream with him in an extra big pair of wading boots as he felt his way very surely along the stream bed, and I shakily held onto the willows, and we found a spot where my dad lifted his finger to his lips and said, "Shh, we don't want to scare the fish away." And then I remember that fish. The biggest fish I'd ever seen in my life. And it was on the end of my line. And my dad, boy, was he proud. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Now, and an old friend in my family, and she is a remarkable woman. She's more sedentary than in past years, since she's in her 90s, but she is still slim, and her white hair frames a shrewd and kindly face. She never married, and for most of her years was a baby nurse. Only the last quarter of her life has she taken to being companion to other elderly and lonesome ladies. Except for one other time, near the beginning of her life. And this is Ellen Muir's story about that haunting and terrifying experience.
Even young as I was then, I had a strange feeling about Malvern Grange. When I first saw it, dark and shadowed at the end of a long drive, lined by the great shade trees that made an eerie black tunnel on that otherwise bright moonlit night. It was the very picture of the haunted house. And fat, wheezy old Joe Wellman driving me by trap from the railroad station didn't help me to feel much easier in my mind.
Well, hello there, Missy. I reckon you'd be Hester Milgram's niece she's expecting.
Yes, sir.
Ellen Muir, right?
That's me.
I'm Joe Wellman. Pleased to meet you. Jack of all trades. Gardener, groom, handyman, and general bodyguard to all them lonesome women out to the Grange. This all the luggage you got?
Yes, sir. Oh, no, I can carry it.
Oh, I bless you, little one. Ain't no weight at all, even for an old geezer like me. Now, come on. I got a horse and trap waiting to drive you off to the Grange. Yes, sir, you sure don't take after Hester. You're a right pretty little thing. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue?
Oh, no, sir.
I didn't say anything out of line, did I? It
wasn't that. I just didn't know what to answer.
Ellen, I want you to meet Jenny. She's a filly just like yourself.
Hello. Hello, Jenny. What a soft nose she has.
Your bags are aboard. It's getting on to twilight, and we'd best be on our way. It's a long drive, so up you go. Did you get anything to eat on the way down the train?
Oh, no, sir.
Oh, wasn't it a dining car?
Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, but I didn't have enough money.
Well, right beside you on the seat, there's a bag of apples there. Hey!
I don't want to take your apples.
Oh, bless you, little miss. I brought you those from the Golden Lion, where I was having a pint while waiting for the train. So just fire away.
Well, that was very kind of you. I'll tell you the truth, I am powerful hungry.
Well, those will keep you going till you get to the Grange. Only don't fill up all the way, because I know your Aunt Hester has tea and a currant cake all waiting for you time you get home. Now, what did I say wrong?
Nothing wrong. Just...
home. That was it, wasn't it, huh? You're homesick.
Kind of. I've never been away from home.
Not much of a one you're coming to with that.
What do you mean?
Well, it's a gloomy old place for a bright young lady like you, stuck off in nowheres with a bunch of old clucking hens and her.
My aunt's very nice. She came to see us once.
Oh, aye, Miss Milgram's all right if you don't cross her. Her heart may be kind enough, but her word is short and her word is law. And don't you ever forget it.
You mentioned her. Who is her?
Oh, well, now, that's something else again. You wanted to watch her and see she's possessed by old Nick himself. She's more than a half a ghost.
Ghost?
A ghost, yes, sir. She's near 100, you know. All wizened up and wrinkled like a witch with long, pointy nails and hands that are all skin and bone.
You mean the madam? Madam Litton.
Who else? Lord knows how she's lived this long. But the good Lord also knows we all hope and pray she'll live to be 150. Our jobs depend on it. When she goes, we go. So does Marvin Grange.
But there's a grandson. Doesn't he live there?
Dr. Litton. Sakes alive. No, he can't abide the place. He lives and practices in the city. Now, here it is dark enough for the moon to be the only light and me scaring the living daylights out of you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Wellman.
I didn't mean to, Miss Muir. I just wanted to prepare you for your visit.
Well, this isn't a visit. I've come here to work.
A little thing like you?
I'm strong. And I can cook and clean as good as any. And things haven't been so good with my pa. My sister Becky is old enough now to help Ma out with the six young ones, and also, I had to hire out. And my aunt needed help. That's why I'm here.
Well, I see you can talk up well enough when you're of a mind to.
Well, mainly when I'm nervous, sort of, and it does sound a bit scary.
Well, we won't talk on it anymore. So I must say, it's a queer household, right enough.
Is it much further?
Nope. We're almost there.
What's the house like?
Oh, why, bless you, it's a great black and white house it is, with black beams running up and down and across, and the gables looking out white as a sheet, and... except like now when the moon is out and it throws the shadows of the trees on them and you can count the leaves' shadows dancing in the wind across the stucco till they look like crabs scuttling across the sand.
Oh.
Only upsy-downs you like, you
know. Oh.
But, here, you might see for yourself. Here's the drive.
My heart was in my mouth as we drove up the drive. Trees were so big that four people spreading their arms and touching fingers could scarce reach round. And it was like a long, great black tunnel there beneath them, with the big house crouching at the end, as huge as a giant, or an ogre in some old fairy tale. I wanted to jump out and run away just as fast as my legs would carry me.
Here you are at last, Ellen.
I'm sorry if I'm late, Aunt Hester.
Well, you're not late, child. It's just been an anxious wait. You've come a long journey. Joe, take the bag up to the first room by the head of the stairs.
Yes, Miss Milgram. See you tomorrow, little missy.
Oh, yes, Mr. Wellman, and thanks for the ride and the conversation.
Pleasure, I'm sure.
He is a hired man, Ellen. Call him Joe. We must all keep our place around here.
But, Aunt Hester...
Do as I say. Now, first... Welcome to Malvern Grange.
Thank you.
Come, we'll go up to my room for a moment and let you freshen up. And then we'll go into the housekeeper's salon where Meg will have something for you to eat. You'll be hungry, I expect.
Oh, not too. Mr. Well... Joe gave me some apples on the way.
And what else did he give you on the way? An earful about all of us, I'll warrant.
Oh, just about Mrs. O'Meara and... well, I don't know whether she is a miss or a missus. He just called her Judith Squires.
Mrs. O'Meara will be Meg to you. She's a servant.
But, Auntie, so am I.
You are my niece, and I am the housekeeper. As I said, everything in its place. Since you are young, they can call you by your first name.
And the other lady?
Judith? Oh, well, she's far on in years. You may call her Miss Squires. This is my bedroom. I'll put the candle over here. And while you take off your coat and hat, I'll just put a taper to the overhead lamp so we can see a little better. There we are. Now then.
Yes, ma'am.
Aunt.
Yes, Aunt.
What did Joe tell you about the madam?
You mean the old lady who's sick? Mrs. Litton?
That's who I mean. The madam.
Why, he...
Don't lie to me, girl.
No, ma'am. No, Aunt Hester. He just said I shouldn't tell anyone.
Well, I'm sure he did. Tell me what nonsense he might have been filling your head with.
Oh, it is nonsense, isn't it? I mean, she isn't possessed by the devil. And she's not half a ghost, is she, Aunt Hester?
I knew it. The answer to you, Ellen, is that the madam is none of your business. She's a very old lady, and she's not in the best of health. Now, that's all you ever need to know of her. You're not here to take care of her. You're here to do housework that the rest of us haven't time for. Now, that's the end of that. Come. We'll go into my dining sitting room, and you can meet Meg and get something to eat.
Where's Mrs. Squires?
She's upstairs sitting with the madam. That Judith fallen asleep again. You'll find Meg through that door. I have to go upstairs to the madam.
In a second, my aunt was hurrying up the stairs, one black mittened hand shielding the candle flame from blowing out in a rush. And as the dark closed around me, I hurried for the door she had pointed out to me while I could still see it. The room I entered was all paneled in oak. Fine fire blazing away. Plenty of light and tea and hot cakes and meat smoking away on the table. And there was Meg, fat and jolly, big as a house.
Well, and here's our new companion at last. Oh, pretty little thing that'll put a bit of light in this gloomy old house, maybe. Oh, you'll be Ellen. Well, I'm Meg O'Meara.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. O'Meara.
No, let's make it Meg the morning. For though I've a year or 20 on you, we're the only ones in this house with the juice of youth still bubbling in our veins.
Thank you.
Oh, my darling, you must be hungry. Sit down, then, and eat. Oh, where's Miss Milgram?
Something happened upstairs.
Oh?
There was someone with a weird sort of laugh. And Aunt Hester went running upstairs.
Oh, that'll be the madam. Ah, Lord preserve us, I suppose Judith fell asleep again. If the old one got away, well, never mind. Your aunt will take care of it. Oh, sit you down, darling, and start eating and forget the other while you can.
So far, certainly a haunting experience. The terror is yet to come. And eventually, the matter of conscience. Let us leave poor little Ellen to her delicious meal, for Peg O'Meara's cooking is as good as her heart, and return shortly to that haunting gabled house.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
See if you can identify these sounds. Squeaky door. Lion growling. A motor scooter. Cow mooing. Spanish dancer. If you agreed with these guesses, you've been fooled, because each sound was made by a whale. That's right, a great big blubbery old whale just buzzing and clicking and grunting away deep down in the ocean. The National Audubon Society has joined a world effort to save these amazing animals from extinction. We need your help. To find out what you can do, write National Audubon Society, 950 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10022.
It's fascinating to sit and watch Ellen Muir tell her story today, calmly and sadly, looking back over 70 years to when it happened. It is easy to understand how vividly she remembers the young girl who lived it. The Ellen Muir who sat in that haunted house, homesick and hungry, and in spite of her jolly companion Meg, still filled with an inescapable premonition of a terror yet to be faced.
You'll have some more cake, Ellen.
And a spot more tea. Oh, no, thank you, Meg. I'm so full I couldn't even manage another crumb. Oh. Thank you. I wonder what's keeping Aunt Hester so long.
Well, I'm thinking it's Judith getting the tongue-lashing this time. She probably fell fast asleep like she's apt to do. And the old madam was up and away.
But I thought she was bedridden.
Well, no, she is and she isn't. Days will go by and she won't open the curtains on that old four-poster she sleeps in. Just stays shut up in there, except for us bringing her meals. But the other days...
But the other days what?
Well, the other day she's a troublesome old lady, no doubt of that. You have to be sharp watching her, or glory be to Mary, she'll be into the fire or out the window.
How old is she?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. 99, her last birthday. And that, 8 months gone by.
Could I ask another question, Meg?
Ask away, what's the harm? 'Tis not to say I'll answer.
Is the old lady well in health?
Well, no harm in asking that. She's... Well, she's been a bit off for a bit lately. But she's much better this last week. I dare say she'll last out her 100 years or more yet. Oh, here comes your aunt down the hall.
I couldn't tell much from my aunt's face when she came in. It was calm and she didn't seem put out. But she drew Meg aside and started to talk with her. In the warm room with company and good food in my stomach, I felt more at home and started to look about. There were pictures on the wall and pretty old china things in the cupboard. And there was a door open in the wainscot. And inside, a closet, I saw this queer thing hanging up inside. I was just going to look at it when...
What are you doing in that closet?
Oh, Aunt Hester. I was just trying to make myself at
home. Never poke your nose into anything in this house that isn't your business.
didn't mean
what
to.
What fact do you have in your hand?
It's so queer. All leather and steel and buckles and things. I don't know what it is.
Nor is it your business to. While you stay here, don't you ever meddle with anything that doesn't belong to you. That's the first and last thing you have to learn about Malvern Grange. Now give it to me.
Oh, Mrs. Milgram, the child meant no harm.
Well, it's better that she learns to mind her P's and Q's. I don't want any repetitions of... She's my niece, Meg. I want her protected.
My aunt took me up to my bed and settled me in for the night. My only instructions were that since my room was next to the madam's, I was to be ready to call if need be, and 6:30 was rising time. I lay for a while awake, nervous-like. I think it was all the tea in me, and the thought of the picture Joe Wellman had given me, the strange old lady next door. Next morning, I slept late, and by the time I got down for breakfast, my aunt and the local doctor were upstairs with a madam, and Meg and I were alone in the kitchen.
Oh, there you are, little Ellen. Country fresh scrambled eggs. Now, you eat them all up. You look a bit pale. Did you sleep well?
I slept sound enough. I'm ashamed I'm up so late.
Well, it's just to show you that your aunt's not all pepper and vinegar. She's the one who said you shouldn't be disturbed till you rested up from your trip. Now, eat your eggs. I'll get you some tea.
Oh, if you don't mind, I'd rather have milk.
Well, and so you should be, darling, to bring the roses back to those pale little cheeks. You know, you don't look like you slept so well.
Well, my room is next to Mrs. Well, you know, the madam. And I thought there was quite a lot of coming and going the way it sounded.
Oh, sure, and the old bell dame has been in one of her tantrums from the night before you arrived till today. She takes fits of the sulks, you see. Sometimes she won't let us dress her, and other times she won't allow us to take the clothes off of her. Oh, and Lord of mercy, Ellen, child, you should see the closet after closet she has full of old-fashioned stuff.
And she still likes to wear them?
Oh, Lord above us, sometimes we can't get her out of them till the doctor comes. Like today.
You mean she goes to bed wearing them?
Ball dresses, evening clothes, and sometimes even a sable or an ermine stole. Now, what am I telling you all this for, love? Just none of your business. She's an old lady, living well past her time, for some reason God only knows. She was a great beauty in her day, so they say. And proud.
Will I get to see her ever, do you think?
Well, I don't know, darling. Just as well you shouldn't.
I would have liked to have seen the old lady. But she might as well have been up in the city for all the clothes I got. I did my cleaning and my needlework. And once or twice a week, the town doctor came in to check the madam. Nights, after my dinner, before the twilight, my aunt made me go out to get some air in the gardens. I was always glad when I came back. Trees were so big, and the place so dark and lonesome. It always made me cry and think of home. Usually, I'd go down to the stable and try to find Joe. Sometimes we could talk.
It's none of my business, Miss Mueller, but why don't you go on back home? This is no place for a nice, fresh little girl like you.
My aunt is very kind and Meg is fun. And I told you my pa isn't doing so well. It's important I have my job here. I can't let my ma and pa down. Or my aunt. It's not so bad here with you and Meg. And Aunt Hester. And as it works out, I seldom see Mrs. Squires and never the madam herself.
Well, that's all to the good so far. But there's something evil lies on this house and this family. I wouldn't want it ever to touch you.
I'm not so young as I apparently seem, Joe. I can take care of myself. In spite of all my tremors and silly fears, I meant that when I said it to Joe. My life was very simple, actually. I did the laundry, some cleaning. And sometimes I sat in the great chamber in which the madam slept, the curtains drawn around the bed, tending what for all intents and purposes might have been a corpse. Till one evening, when I was in my own room reading, my aunt was in the next room with the madam. And of a sudden, I could hear them talking. I pricked up my ears, but it was nothing but a mumble. Till I stole ever so quiet to my own door, opened it a crack to listen. Then I could hear the old lady speak at last. A queer, high voice, like a bird. I don't know how to describe it. But for all it cracked and trembled, it was clear enough.
One can't hurt anyone, ma'am, without the Lord permit.
Ah, but that's what it is, you see. What it is.
Oh, now, hush, now, don't get yourself worked up.
They're all against me, but they lie. They tell lies, you see, and they're jealous. Envy, because I'm beautiful. So they lie. He believes them, maybe.
Believes them about what? Faces they want, ma'am, and say what they will. Just remember, if the Lord is for us, who can be against us?
Oh, I love him so, do you see? I couldn't bear to share him. But now he's dead. Dead and gone. Oh, dead and gone.
I kept listening with my ear to the door a long time. Not another word did I hear. So finally, I closed it quietly and went back to my picture book. Till suddenly...
Will you wake her again after the trouble I've had getting her to sleep?
The madam?
Who else? All dressed up like she was off to the inauguration ball. Not even her wig or her slippers would she take off. Oh, I am exhausted. Now, listen to me. Move your candle and your book over to your door and keep it open so you can watch and listen. I've left Madame Litton's door ajar. And I'm off to have a cup of tea and a bite. And when Judith and I come back up, you can go down and Meg will give you supper in my room. But if you hear her stir, mind, give me a call. Pull shut her door and hang on to the handle as if for dear life till I and the others come up to help.
I sat there, trying to keep my eyes on the book, but they kept being drawn down the shadowed hall to the other door. I couldn't hold it back. I had to have one peep, just to see what the old lady was like. I was near blinded the moment I entered the room. I'd never been in it after dark before, and it was ablaze with 22 wax candles. I tiptoed to the bed and listened. I could hear her breathing, rusty-like, the kind of gurgle. And slowly I parted the curtain and looked in. There she was. Just lying as Meg described her that first day. Scarlet and green and satin and silk and lace. A big powdered wig. Heels as tall as my hand. And as sharp as her big crooked nose and her long pointy nails. Half of the whites of her eyes were open. Her throat rattled as she breathed. I was frozen stiff with fright. And before I knew it, she opened her eyes and sat up. spun around and dropped her shoes to the ground with a clack. She stood up, pointing at me with a finger, like a corpse come to life.
You young imp. You devil's brat. Why did you say it to my face?
Say what, madam?
Why did you say I killed the boy?
What boy?
You know. Tell me or I'll shake the life out of you. I'll rake you with my nails to the black light.
Into a corner of the room, faces the demoniacal old beldame who advances on her, mad yellow-white eyes rolling in her head, her ancient wrinkled hands with the nails mounted on the fingers like knives reaching for her face and her throat. I'll return shortly with Act Three.
If you're a businessman, you know how fast advertising costs are rising. Adflation, it's called. Wouldn't you like to stretch your ad budget, increase reach without increasing cost? It can be done. It's been proven. The market was San Francisco, the time spring 74. The budget, $8,000. That money in television reached almost 1.5 million adults and delivered over 2 million impressions. Then the budget was split, 50% TV, 50% radio. Adult reach increased 28%, and commercial impressions more than doubled on the same budget. Across the country in New York, a similar study proved the same point. Radio in a mix with TV improves the buy. Radio is efficient. It's being welcomed into more and more media plans. Why not? After all, radio's a great mixer. Get radio selling for you. Call this station. We'll suggest ways radio can help you fight inflation. Furnished by Radio Advertising Bureau.
Hun, would you please pass the potatoes?
Anyone want some more rolls? Bill, care for a couple more slices?
What's the dessert?
Dessert can wait. Finish what's on your plate. And don't forget your vegetables.
Boy, was that good.
You're not finished. What am I going to do with all this food? Who wants seconds?
A typical American scene around a typical American dinner table. Yet while these people are having their dinner just as they've done every night of their lives, there are millions of children starving. Just as they've done every night of their lives. Children in Honduras, in Bangladesh, in Vietnam. Save the Children wants to help these children and their families and their communities. But to help them, we need your help first to provide food for the children of the world. Send your contributions to Save the Children, Box 970, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, New York, 10017. Do it before your next meal. You'll find it very satisfying.
A story in three stages. First, haunting. Second, replete with terror. Both of these shall continue. But last, and far from least, the matter of conscience. The complex of ethical and moral principles which controls or inhibits the actions and thoughts of an individual. We begin now, certainly, with Ellen's conscience, which was bothering her quite as much as her memory of terror, now that she was safely down in the sitting room with Meg, while Mrs. Squires and her aunt were upstairs greeting the madam.
Now drink your tea, Ellen. I put a wee drop of brandy in it to calm you down, dear.
Oh, I'm really all right now, Meg. I just lost my head a little. It wasn't that I couldn't have handled her physically. It was just... I was so scared.
Oh, sure. She's enough to scare the devil when she gets into one of her fits.
I'm sorry I wasn't strong enough to fight away being curious.
Well, this time curiosity didn't kill the cat.
Don't am I curious myself for all that?
About what?
Would you say those words again the old lady said to you?
She said, why do you say I killed the boy?
And did you say she killed the boy?
Well, I meant, why would I say a thing like that?
Oh, just a curious thing, love. That doesn't matter. Come on now, we'd best see you off to bed. That drop of brandy will give you a nice, quiet sleep. I can see your eyes beginning to droop already.
There, Jenny, my love. Nothing like a nice bath and a good rub down. But what is it? Oh, hello there, little missy. Haven't seen you since all the excitement a day or so gone. How are you, Miss Muir?
Oh, Joe, when we're alone, can't it be just Ellen?
Oh, I don't know. Might get me in trouble with Miss Milgram.
That'd make two of us.
Well, she'll come around. She's a good woman at heart, and she knows there isn't a single solitary person in the world without a bump of curiosity.
Yes, I know Aunt Hester's only strict and not unkind. The trouble is...
Trouble is what?
The trouble is I'm still suffering from that bump.
Curiosity, huh?
Uh-huh. What boy?
Well, that's an old story, Missy. But if you want to hear it, I'll tell it as sure as I can. Now, mind, this is only secondhand from my father, who was groom here before me, and it's 70 years ago.
You don't have to tell me if you don't want to, Joe.
Ellen, what's the point, Mark? Maybe it'll help you feel better, and that's all the reward I'd want. The madam, Mrs. Litton, oh, she was a great beauty in her day, tell me. But when she married the owner of Marvin Grange, he was a widower, and he had a son about 9 years old.
Is that the boy she was talking about?
Well, I suppose.
Well, why would she think she killed him?
Oh, that was a terrible tragedy, little Miss Ellen. The boy, from what I hear, was a fine young man, full of energy and daring. There are those who say he was allowed too much liberty, because one day, he just plain disappeared. And the hide and the hair of him was seen from that day forward, save only his hat found by the lake under a hawthorn bush.
But where do they think he went? What happened to him?
Well, his little boat was missing, so... He must have drowned.
Oh, how awful.
My pa said that Mr. Litton bore up under it, but the madam went to pieces for a long while.
But she must have had children then, if...
Oh, yes, after she got over the loss, she had a boy, Mr. Stanley, that was, who was the father of Dr. Edmund. Mr. Stanley died a few years ago, so the estate now belongs to Dr. Edmund, the old lady's grandson.
To spend all those years worrying about something she couldn't help. And now to have it all back up at the end.
Huh? What are you talking about, Ellen?
Oh, I was just thinking. I know it's a good thing we all have a conscience, but it can be a terrible thing, too. Poor Madame Litton must be just as conscience-stricken at what she might have done as I am at what I shouldn't have.
What's that?
She probably blames herself for not watching the little boy more closely. Just as I blame myself for trying to watch something closely that was none of my business.
Oh, now, Ellen, a young girl, curious, you weren't to blame.
No more than the madam, I guess. But try to tell your conscience that. My conscience was not to be easily set at rest, as I found out only too soon.
Now, Ellen, will you stop your moping?
Oh, how can I? Ever since the doctor came and I found out what that contraption hanging on the door was for.
Oh, bless you, child. It's not the first time she's been in the strait waistcoat. She's been in it many a time when she became violent.
But does she have to be shut up in it?
Well, the doctor's afraid she'll take another fit of madness as she's done before.
But it's all my fault.
Oh! How could it be your fault?
Because I did something I shouldn't have.
Oh, dear Mary in heaven, if we all lived our lives without doing some little thing we shouldn't have, we'd all be in the same leather jerkins.
Well, it's on my conscience.
Well, me darling, I wish you only one thing.
What?
That should be the heaviest thing you ever bear on your conscience.
Meg's words made me feel better. Till the end came. A wild, terrible end. The screaming and the begging for no one knew what. And at long last, the soul made its flitting from her body, and she was at rest. Dr. Litton was written for, but he was off in France on a vacation. And the delay would be so long that the local doctor agreed she could not be kept in her place. And the old lady of Malvern Grange was laid away to rest in the church where her ancestors were buried. While we all waited for Dr. Litton's return, they moved me from my room, away from the old ladies, to one by the end of the hall. There was little in the room, but a bed and a big bureau. So a few things were moved in from the madam's room, which had been stripped when she was coffined. Among them, the big looking glass she used to dress up in front of and admire herself in her finery. Night after I moved there, that's where she came from in the middle of the night, the great key in her hand, her eyes fixed on the alcove in the wall at the foot of my bed. With a blast of cold air, and I could see everything through her. The nightstand, the window frame, the pattern on the wall. Straight for the big bureau in the alcove she went, key outstretched. And as she vanished, I came alive and screamed as I've never screamed in my life.
All right, Ellen. All right. It's all right
I'm
now.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Aunt Esther. Oh, maybe it was a dream.
Now, just tell me. Had the appearance that you saw a key in its hand?
Oh, yes.
Was it like this one?
Why, that's it. The very image.
Are you sure?
As sure as sure.
Well, that'll do, child. You sleep here with me tonight. And the doctor will be here by noon tomorrow. I'm sorry for what I've put you through.
The doctor arrived promptly at noon the following day. And after a half an hour or so, closeted with my aunt in the housekeeper's room, I was called in and introduced.
Now, what is this you say you saw, my dear?
It was your grandmother, Dr. Litton.
Well, you know my grandmother has been dead for nearly a month.
It was her. I mean, not alive, but a ghost.
You believe in ghosts?
I never did, sir, but I believe in this one. I could see right through her.
And you say that she just walked into the big high bureau and disappeared?
With a key in her hand.
This key?
Or its copy.
Hold on a minute. You mean the room at the end of that hall to the left, up the stairs?
Yes.
And the bureau, you say, is in the alcove?
Yes.
Come on. We're going up there and bring that key. All right, now, ladies, if you'll assist me. And don't try to lift, just slide.
Easy.
That's far enough. Now.
What is it, Dr. Litton?
When I was a boy, 25 years ago, an old servant we had told me there used to be a door here. By heaven, there it is. The plate and jewels used to be kept here before the big pantry was built. Give me that key. Lord Harry, the lock turned. All right, now. Stand back, both of you, but hold that candle high. Here goes.
Was a small skeleton's hands resting on the inside of the door as if in a last plea for mercy. And as it fell to the floor, it all crumbled to dust, save for the small skull, which bounced and then rolled to my aunt's feet. That's all that was left from what had been shut up there all those years, except some jet buttons and a small green hafted knife.
boy. He wasn't drowned. He was shut up here to die.
Oh, no. My grandmother couldn't have.
It's her family.
She wanted it all for her own child. I damn myself for every minute of service I gave her.
You can't be sure.
When the boy disappeared, he was wearing a velvet suit with jet buttons. You see, a favorite possession was a green-hafted knife. A knife from his father.
But I
and the key. The key Ellen saw the ghost carry, I found at the bottom of your grandmother's chest, beneath her wigs and gloves and jewels and silks and satins, under which she tried to hide her guilt. Well, it served her little at the last. She's where she feared she'd be in the end. With a black devil in the deeps of hell. Where she belongs.
Madame Lytton was afraid to die, and equally afraid to live. For what a hell her later years must have become when ambition, desire, and greediness, like other emotions, are no longer strong and driving. Certainly no longer strong enough to still the pangs of conscience. I'll be back shortly.
Oh, great spirit, whose voice in the winds I hear, and who give life to all the world, hear me.
The voice is Iron Eyes Cody of the Cherokee Nation. The words are a prayer first spoken 400 years ago by his people, a people who love the land.
Make me walk in beauty. Make my heart respect all you have made. Make me wise that I may know all you have taught my people, the lessons you have hidden in every rock.
In some Americans today, that spirit is reborn. Throughout the land, areas of thoughtless litter and pollution are being restored to their natural beauty. And yet we still have so far to go. So everyone must get involved. To contact the Keep America Beautiful team nearest you, write Keep America Beautiful, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York. People start pollution. People can stop it.
A public service message from this station and the Advertising Council. I find it hard nowadays to pass any neglected object by the water's edge without having to repress a shudder. A beer can, a pair of sunglasses, a sneaker, a child's pail, or most of all, a hat. For the moment I spot the object, I don't see it, but a poor little boy shut up to die in a sealed safe where neither his cries nor his wild thumpings on the door or his prayers, if he knew how to say them, could be heard. Our cast included Jotta Rowland, Ann Petoniak, Joan Shea, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Hello, Frank. Thanks for coming. Your lawyer will be here in half an hour or so.
My lawyer?
Let's do it, Rocky.
Are you crazy or something?
Kill Johnny Mallory? And they say you did.
They'll have to prove that.
They can.
What?
The bullets that killed Mallory were fired from your gun.
It's impossible. That 30 has never left my hand. You got me the permit for it.
Now, look, Rocky. They picked you up last night when Manny Revell told
Manny?
Them. Manny? Told them about the fight you had with Mallory in Manny's office and the threat you made. A ballistics check to be with the bullet fired from your gun. The markings are identical.
They can't be.
They are.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Thank you.
bright and beautiful music comes your way from midnight to 6. World and national news on the hour with CBS Radio Network. George Good has local news. From KOIN in Portland, my name's Bill Garrity. Have a good night tonight and a better day tomorrow. It's 12 midnight.
CBS News. The House has now approved a measure to give President Ford the power to use American troops to evacuate Americans and Vietnamese from South Vietnam. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The measure has now been approved by both houses, the final vote coming in the House of Representatives within the hour. John Meyer has a report.
The final vote, arrived at after 14 hours and 42 minutes of debate, was 230 to 187 in favor of the evacuation bill. As finally passed by the House, with changes adopted during the long amendment process, the measure is similar in substance to legislation approved Wednesday by the Senate. The House bill specifies that evacuation of South Vietnamese nationals shall be incidental to the evacuation of Americans and their dependents. But it does permit the use of U.S. troops to protect the evacuees. John Meyer, CBS News, on Capitol Hill.
Flying back to Washington after a speech in New Orleans Wednesday night, President Ford said he may reassess his request to Congress for military aid to South Vietnam. The president said South Vietnam is a very fluid situation. Earlier, in a speech at Tulane University, the president said, as far as the United States is concerned, the Vietnam War is over.
Today, America can regain the sense of pride that existed before Vietnam. But it cannot be achieved by refighting a war that is finished, as far as America is concerned.
Also called for a period of great national reconciliation. More news in a moment.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now, at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
Oh, great spirit, whose voice in the winds I hear, make me walk in beauty. Make my heart respect all you have made.
In some Americans today, the spirit of that Indian prayer is reborn. But now everyone must get involved in the struggle against pollution and litter. Like Keep America Beautiful, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York. People start pollution. People can stop it.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The South Vietnamese cabinet has resigned, and political sources in Saigon say the country's president, in power only 3 days, is asking another man to form a government. The reports say President Tran Van Wong is asking General Duong Van Minh to put together a government that the communists might agree to negotiate with. The general, known as Big Minh, was the leader of a coup that ousted South Vietnamese President Diem in 1963. In Saigon, a spokesman for the government military command says fighting scaled down in the past 24 hours, but communist pressure is continuing on key government defense posts. Government warplanes pounded communist positions near the capital. Terrorists have struck again in Israel. Tom Fenton has a report from Tel Aviv.
An Israeli soldier has been killed and his mother wounded by a parcel bomb, the first such incident in Israel in several years. First reports said the soldier was killed while opening a parcel in the post office of Herzliya, a town a few miles north of Tel Aviv. Earlier this year, the Israeli government issued a warning about the possibility of postal bombs after several letter bombs exploded in a post office in Beirut. At the time, Israeli officials feared reprisals, although the source of the letter bombs received in Beirut was never disclosed. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
6 members of a Fort Lauderdale, Florida family are believed dead after their small plane crashed Wednesday night into Lake Pontchartrain while approaching New Orleans Lakefront Airport. Now this.
I'm looking for work. I'm a watchmaker. It seems there isn't much call for that. I guess I could find something else. But it's what I like to do. It's what I do best. I just can't find anything now. It's the old story. You have to know someone.
There's a fast, modern employment service bringing people and jobs together. Job Service. Only Job Service has Job Bank, a new computerized system. If you can't find a job, we'll match your skills to a job in Job Bank. If you're an employer and can't fill a job, Job Bank will tell more people about it than you thought possible. Job Bank helped us fill over 4 million jobs last year. In 40 years, we've never charged a fee. Call Job Service. Finding a job or filling a job shouldn't be hard work.
We're working to get people working.
For Job Service, contact your state employment service. A message on behalf of the U.S. Department of Labor.
In Chicago, Mayor Richard Daley is again angry with the newspapers. On Wednesday, the Chicago Tribune and the Daily News carried front-page reports saying that Daley's son, John, has set a wedding date with Mary Lou Briatta and identified the girl's father as a reputed crime syndicate boss. Daley said there is no evidence linking Louis Briatta to organized crime, and the mayor added, there's never anything as low as a newspaper. In 1963, hearings by the U.S. Senate Rackets Committee listed Briatta as one of the full-time members of a Chicago crime syndicate. Doug Poling, CBS News.
Republican legislative leaders have criticized Governor Bob Straub's decision to replace Attorney General Lee Johnson as chairman of the State Law Enforcement Council. Straub, a Democrat, asked Johnson, a Republican, and several other members of the council to resign pending reorganization of the council. In a joint statement, Senate Republican leader Victor Atiyah and House Republican leader Roger Martin said the firing of Johnson was politically motivated. The statement said, and I quote, "It appears to us that the main reason for this change is the fact that Mr. Johnson is a Republican." They said it's a sad day in Oregon, known for bipartisan government, when the prime requisite for public service is a person's political party affiliation. The Oregon House has moved through a 17-item agenda during the first evening meeting of the 1975 legislature, passing all but one bill. That legislation, which altered state laws relating to contracting crime, was returned to committee for amendments. Among bills approved in a session that lasted little more than an hour was legislation that would make extreme emotional disturbance a legal defense in homicide trials. The legislation was introduced at the request of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Also approved is legislation that would allow the Legislative Administration Committee to appoint subcommittees. The bill would allow for payment of persons appointed to the subcommittee. The Portland City Council has, once again, endorsed the I-205 freeway, which is to conduct intercity highway traffic around Portland to the east. Mayor Neil Goldschmidt, an opponent of the Mount Hood Freeway, says his critics might be surprised he supports I-205 and noted the city's endorsement requests freeway design changes.
I think the resolution indicates first and foremost the desire of the City Council to see I-205 built and built as soon as possible. It also requests a modification to the design of I-205, which we believe will enable I-205 to perform its function more efficiently and at the same time provide safeguards for our city neighborhoods.
The council resolution goes to state highway officials who have been conducting another environmental hearing under mandate of a federal court suit. Maywood Park, a small community in the freeway's path, brought the suit. The mayor said yesterday that redesign of the project to reduce the number of lanes and the surface freeway interchanges has been done well by the state highway engineers involved, solving many early objections to I-205. The Reverend Atwood Foster, central figure in an $11 million church financing plan with operations in receivership, told United Press International late yesterday, that was last night, he has never made any personal gains from the program. Atwood said, in fact, he has put his life savings in the program. In an exclusive telephone interview from an undisclosed location in Arizona, Atwood said, and I quote, "I have put everything in the program through the years, strength, resources, savings, everything." Unquote. State Senator Ed Fadley of Eugene says Mrs. Wayne Morris has agreed to a purchase price of not more than $350,000 for the Morris Ranch in Eugene. Purchase of the Morris Ranch by the state has been proposed as a means of preserving the property as an historical site. Legislation that would appropriate up to $250,000 in state money to match private, local, or federal funds is under study by the Ways and Means Committee. If the ranch is sold for $350,000, the state share would be just $175,000. The proposed purchase has been criticized by some Republicans as too expensive for the state. The Portland-Vancouver weather. Showers today, Friday. Lows tonight in the mid-40s. That's an overnight low, and low 40s Friday night. The highs in the low 50s. South to southwest winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour. The chance of rain, 80%. Friday, 60%. Friday night. Downtown Portland currently, it's rain and 48 degrees. And that's KOIN News to 12:10 a.m. I'm George Goode.